שלום, אנחנו קוראים בתלמוד 10 הספירות, חלק א'.
We're reading in the study of the 10 ספירות, part 1, the הסתכלות פנימית, the inward scrutiny. You can find the reading materials on our site and also send questions there. The study of 10 ספירות, part 1, we are in הסתכלות פנימית.
ראשית כל צריכים לדעת.
First, we must know that when dealing with spiritual matters, which have no concern with time, space, and motion, and moreover, when dealing with godliness, we do not have the words by which to contemplate and express. Our entire vocabulary is taken from sensations of imaginary senses. Thus, how can they assist us where sense and imagination do not reign? For example, if you take the subtlest of words, namely lights, it nonetheless resembles and borrows from the light of the sun or an emotional light of contentment. Thus, how can they be used to express godly matters? They would certainly fail to provide the reader with anything true. It is even truer in a place where these words should disclose the negotiations and the wisdom in print, as in done in any research of wisdom. If we fail with even a single inadequate word, the reader will be instantly disoriented and will not find his hands nor his legs in this whole matter. For this reason, the sages of the Kabbalah have chosen a special language that we can call the language of the branches. There's not an essence or a conduct of an essence in this world that does not derive from its root in the upper world. Moreover, the beginning of every being in this world starts from the upper world and then hangs down to this world. Thus, the sages have found an adequate language without trouble by which they could convey their attainments to each other by word of mouth and in writing from generation to generation. They have taken the names of the branches in this world, where each name is self-explanatory, as though pointing to its upper root in the system of the upper worlds. That should appease your mind. Is this clear so far? Questions? You can ask. Meaning, there's a problem that if the Kabbalists want in some way to tell each other or to us about the upper world, they don't have words because it's all feeling. How can you clothe this feeling in an explanation? It's impossible. But because what they attain in the upper world has a root, and in the lower world it's a branch, they can use the branches that are in this world also in order to express by that some concepts, definitions in the upper world. That's why they called this language the language of the branches, because according to the branches, the names of the branches, they call the upper roots. And they have no problem with that. What? It's written here that every single word has to be precise, so they chose those words meticulously according to what they see, branch and root. From above, they look, let's say, downwards. They above attain the root, and in this world, they see what the branch of it is and what the branch will be called. Then they take the name of the branch and use it to refer to the root. But then he says it's so that they'll be able to pass to one another, the Kabbalists, their attainments. That's not important. Let's say this is the upper world. And here is the lower world. Yes? Here, these are roots. And here it is branches. Here you have attainment. And here it's what our eyes see. So what you get from this attainment, they see here the names. And use them to name the roots of those. Very simple. So what are you asking? Couldn't they have explained that same letter in the language of branches? Like open it and imply it in a sentence, a few words. Let's say the meaning of that. Do you understand that this is a pencil? It's a pencil. I can say that it's a writing utensil with, I can call it differently also. Yes. But everyone understands that this is a pencil in this world. Yes. If not, you can go to the dictionary, which the wise people of this world wrote, and read what actually is the, what does it mean, a pencil, that you don't know. But in the upper world, they attain it, the root from which it cascades to this world, the concept of a pencil, and that's why they call it that way. You just need to understand that the names are of this world, and they're pointing to the phenomena that are in the upper worlds. Yes. As much as I understood, maybe until maybe 500 years ago, everything that's described, like the words, were in parallel to what exists in this world. Shirt is the root for it. Table, there's a root to it. And at some point, there started to appear things in the world that seemingly have no root. Correct. Like, I don't know, Facebook or airplane or all kinds of things that there are no such words. Correct. What are those phenomena? Because we are artificially doing things, we're adding things that don't exist in nature. They don't exist naturally. That's a plastic, radio, airplane, like you're saying. In the computer, you have many such concepts which don't exist in the upper world. And also in this world, don't exist naturally. We really need to understand that the branch and root belong to that which is in nature. And what's not in nature, meaning that a person invents artificially, there are no branches to that that are clarified, and certainly they have no roots that are precise and clarified, but rather man takes the branches of this world and makes from them additional results that are as a result of the branches of this world and not as a result of the roots. What does this imply, that phenomena? It points to the fact that you're bringing into the world artificial things that are additional. Okay. It's not good or bad. And that's already another question. You take a few chemical fundamental things and you make new materials out of it. So to all these elements, you have roots. And they're as branches in this world, but when you mix them and get some new result, there's no spiritual roots to it. Now the question comes, if I do in this world, nevertheless, some action that receives a result, is there nevertheless a spiritual root? Because I'm not doing something that is done from zero. I'm doing it because it comes in my mind and in my hands and my desire, and I'm carrying out an action and invent and bring forth something new. So it has a spiritual root. The spiritual root does exist for all the actions of man, but the result of this root, it does not exist in a disclosed manner in the spiritual world. It doesn't exist there. There's no root to plastic. But does it exist? What? Not disclosed, does it exist? Is there a root to it? Nevertheless, no. No. There is a result of my action, but not in a direct manner that there's a root to plastic, let's say, in the upper world, and its branch here is with us. Because if there was, it would even exist without the involvement of man in it. Yes. Let's say a wagon. That's a connection of wheels and a box. It's mentioned in the books. Such things. It's also a result of man. But it's like they're using it as a branch and root in the language. You are right. There are many such things. But probably, naturally, a person uses it because there are direct roots in nature and to such things. Because it's like the claim of the generation that, there's a thing about a bull beating a cow. In our world, those things don't even exist anywhere. They're tablets now and things like that. There's no connection to that language of the Torah and Kabbalah. It speaks in a language of details that don't even exist in my world anymore, in my reality. In my reality, there's a computer, a tablet, a TV. Nothing of that is... It's kind of like, how is the generation supposed to connect to... I don't know how to ask this. The generation can't find a connection to these books because nothing from there exists in their world. That's not important. It only seems to you that way because nevertheless, what we use is those inclinations, those tendencies that humanity always had. Where you want to connect to someone, then you today connect through a computer or through a telephone, but back then, they wanted to connect in a different way in previous generations. So what? By that, you're just adding a little bit of sophistication to it. But the principle is the principle. Do you understand? You're not inventing anything new from nature, only from kind of assembling it or making it more complex in a certain way. No more than that. Is it a good sign for development or good or bad? Is it good for development of the will to receive that all these things start to appear around? I don't want to talk about that, good or bad. Don't pull us to all kinds of things like that. We're talking about root and branch. That's it. That's already philosophizing. Good, bad, that's all eventually for the good. So in short, branch and root are in such a way that the Kabbalists attain the roots, and also the branches are before them, and therefore they can now receive from the branches names to use to describe their roots. Two quotes from the Essence of the Wisdom of Kabbalah by Baal HaSulam. The verse 1, from the upper it will teach the lower one, meaning that at first we need to attain the upper roots as they are in their spirituality above all imagination, but in pure attainment. And after he attains well the upper roots from his reason, one can look at the tangible roots, branches of this world, and to know how each branch relates to his root in the upper world, in its whole, all its orders, in quantity and quality. And then, in the continuation of that article, the sages of Kabbalah found a vocabulary that is before them, that is sufficient for a spoken language before them, that is excellent, to be able to converse with each other in the upper roots of the upper world. Meaning, by reminding each other the lower branch that is tangible in this world, which is defined well to our senses, and those who hear understand from their reason the upper root that this physical branch implies, because it's related to it and it was even imprinted by it. But you can actually use any language, not necessarily Hebrew. We have in the Zohar many words that were taken from Greek, from ancient Greece, or others from other languages. It's no problem. because it's the name of a branch. You have 2,000 languages in the world. You can use any language as long as it has a root that points to it, and that's it, or that it points to the root, either from above downwards or from below upwards. Okay? Good. Yes. The question is, what happens with words that don't have branches? Like, for example, Sfirot or Parzufim. After all, there are no branches in this world of ours. Sfira comes from the word safir, sapphire, that illuminates. It doesn't point to something in our world. Parzuf, we have a face, a parzuf, a face of everything has, any living thing has a face, which expresses the corporeal object or spiritual object. So actually, there are no words that they're using. There are such words in the wisdom of Kabbalah, in the language of Kabbalah, that don't have branches in this world. That don't have branches, that they're as only in spirituality. Yes. And then they called those spiritual phenomena according to what they call them. According to gematrias and other things. And they couldn't. The fact that every branch in this world has a spiritual root, that's clear, because the cascading is from above down. But not all the spiritual roots must have corporeal branches. The branches must have their roots, but the roots don't have to have a branch that's corporeal. What is an example? The whole Havaya, for example, and yes, yes. So why couldn't they write all their explanations in such a language that is only roots that don't have branches? Meaning, so it'd be clear that there's no... No, these are only for things that are truly only in the roots. In this world, we don't know them yet, really. What's the result of Havaya? All of reality. Well, so what will you make from that? And other than that, it doesn't dress. It dresses, but it's not revealed inside matter. I don't have words to describe that also, I feel. Yes. So the reason for such words that don't have branches and we use them are why? That's in our lacks, in our deficiencies. That's from our deficiency. What did you want to add? I want to add to what I read that also in Tess, in Volume 1, Part 1, he writes, the whole difficulty for beginners is that they grasp things in their expression that is corporeal, in expressions of time, movement, changes, and the authors use them only as signs about their upper roots. Yes. We're continuing in Histaklut Pnimit. That should appease your mind regarding the perplexing expressions we often find in books of Kabbalah. And some are even foreign to the human spirit. It is because once they have chosen this language to express themselves, namely the language of the branches, they could no longer leave a branch unused because of its inferior degree. They could not avoid using it to express the desired concept when there is no other branch, our world, in our world, to be taken in its place. Just as two hairs do not feed off the same foramen, we do not have two branches that relate to the same root. It's also impossible to exterminate the object in the wisdom of that is related to that inferior expression. Such a loss would inflict impairment and great confusion in the entire scope of the wisdom. Since there is no other wisdom in the world where matters are so intermingled by cause and effect, reason and consequence, as in the wisdom of Kabbalah. Matters are interconnected and tied to each other from top to bottom like one long chain. Thus, there's no freedom of will here to switch or replace the bad names with better ones, We must always provide the exact branch that points to its upper root and elaborate on it until the accurate definition is provided for the scrutinizing readers. Okay? There are no questions. Yes? What is the root in spirituality? Force. The force which begets in us, in this world, let's say, in such a way, the branch that we feel, reveal, describe in a name, according to how it's revealed to us. And then we can use that name in order to refer to the root. Because the root has no name. The root is a force. No matter how you call it, that's what it will be. Is the whole system to attain all the system in order to attain the roots? The system doesn't exist for the sake of something special, in order to raise a person to the degree of the Creator. That's what the whole system exists for, not just to attain the roots. Who attains? A person exists in order to attain his upper roots. By connecting them together, he attains the name Havaya. We need to connect all the roots together. Certainly, they connect together in the Creator, who is the source of them all. Is that why the roots exist? In order to... The roots all exist in the upper force, in the Creator. Are you hearing me? The branch in this world, in the world, used to the cascade down to this world to branches. In this world, we have branches of that. The branches are differentiated. They're separate. They're contradicted. There's no connection between the branches. The moment I start to attain the, in order to bestow, by that, I start to discover the system which connects between all these branches together. And with these branches, I raise all of reality to the roots. And in the roots, I get the Havaya. Yes. And how to relate to the branches when we talk about this world being an imaginary world? Yes, it's imaginary. The branches are imaginary? Yes. What you feel? Accordingly, we exist. Do they exist? No, they don't exist. But where does it really exist, seemingly? In your imagination. In your imaginary senses. Why imaginary? Because they're in order to receive. They don't exist. They exist in order to give you the possibility to exist and attain and ascend from them to the true roots. Meaning the fact that we're saying that this is imaginary, it's related, relative to the roots, to the real world, seemingly. Yes, that if you reach the truth, you will feel that what was before, what was apparent to you before, does not exist. That existed only like in a dream. So they're talking about branches specifically to us, for those who are attaining the imaginary world through in order to receive, yes? Otherwise they wouldn't be talking in branches. Yes, certainly. But also between them. How could they talk? Also between them. How the wisdom of Kabbalah is attained to us in our feelings. So how would I move my feelings to another, explain it to them in words, or in some qualities without words, that's also possible. But nevertheless, I must give something. And the code that I pass to him is the language. So what's he saying? That the Kabbalist found from generation to generation, if you're together with the Kabbalist in contact, then you can talk to him in an internal language. We have a language for the lower ones and a language for the upper ones. He writes that in the letter. Letter 4? Yes? It's... We will get to that. Yes. How can you explain that in the imaginary world there are so many details that are so precise, these details? According to the roots. According to the roots. Every root needs to give birth to his branch. That's it. There's no other explanation. Simply according to the number of roots. And there is not here like one root gives birth to several branches, but one to one. Next. Where are we? He writes, come and see, there's a language for the upper and there's a holy language for the lower ones. It's in letter 4 in Aramaic, and there's a translation to Hebrew of it. We're continuing. Indeed, those whose eyes have not been opened to the sights of heaven and have not acquired the proficiency and the connections of the branches of this world with their roots in the upper worlds are like the blind scraping the walls. For they will not understand the true meaning of even a single word, for each word is a name of a branch that relates to its root. Only if they receive an interpretation from a genuine sage who makes himself available to explain the matter in the spoken language, which is necessarily like translating from one language to another, meaning from the language of the branches to the spoken language. And then only will he be able to explain the spiritual terms as it is. It's a problem he needs to exert also. There are Kabbalists that are not capable of doing that, and there are Kabbalists that actually, it works out for them. They explain well, because that already doesn't depend on one's attainment or in the height of his attainment, but on what was given to him, what he's capable of explaining. Like in our world, there are people that are truly speakers, they're, you know, have a great virtue of the way they can speak. And there's people that can't talk. It doesn't show about the depth of their understanding in any way. But the expression, that's already a profession. Yes. This is what I have troubled to do in this interpretation, to explain the Ten Sefirot, as the godly sage, the Ari, has instructed us, in their spiritual purity, devoid of any tangible terms. Thus, any beginner may approach this wisdom without failing in any materialization or mistake. With the understanding of these ten sefirot, one will also come to examine and know how to comprehend the rest of the issues in this world wisdom. Because in short, what we need to attain is the roots, and then we will understand everything. Before that, it always comes to us in confusion, and we don't get anywhere with that. Okay? Yes, but ask to the point. I thought that spirituality is only the Ten Sefirot. We don't care what you thought. Did you hear? That's suggesting, where are the roots in the Ten Sefirot? The roots in the Ten Sefirot are in the first Havaya, in the four Bchinot of direct light. I'm giving you the opportunity to ask according to what we learn, and not besides that. Not anything but that. And not that all of a sudden you feel like you want to ask. We have a limited time and many people. Next. Chapter 1. Know that before the emanations were emanated and the creatures created, there is an upper, simple light that filled the whole of reality. These words require explanation. How was there a reality that the simple light had filled before the worlds were emanated? Also, the issue of the coming of the desire to be restricted in order to bring to light the perfection of his deeds. It is implied in the book that there was already some deficiency there. Also, the issue of the middle point in him, where the restriction occurred, is quite perplexing. For he had already said that there is neither beginning nor the end there. So how is there a middle? Indeed, these words are deeper than the ocean, and I must therefore elaborate on their interpretation. There is not one thing in the whole reality that is not contained in Ein Sof. The contradicting terms in our world are contained in him in the form of one, unique and unified. One. Know that there is no essence of a single being in the world, both the ones perceived by our senses and the ones perceived by our minds, I, that is not included in the Creator. For they all come to us from him, and can one give that which is not in him? The Creator, meaning the first Havaya, not above the upper root, even higher than that. This matter has already been thoroughly explained in the books, but we must understand the concepts that are separated are opposite for us, such as the term wisdom is regarded as different from the terms sweetness, as wisdom and sweetness are two separate items, terms. Similarly, the term operator certainly differs from the term operation. The operator and its operation are necessarily two separate concepts. It's even more so with opposite terms such as sweet and bitter, and as such, these are certainly discerned as separate. However, in him, wisdom and pleasure, sweetness and acerbity, operation and operator, and other such different and opposite forms are all contained as one in his simple light. There are no differentiations among them whatsoever, as is the term one unique and unified. One indicates a single evenness. Unique implies that everything that extends from him, all these multiplicities are in him as single, as high essence. Unified shows that although he performs many operations, there is one force that performs all these, and they all return and unite in the form of one. Indeed, this one form swallows all the forms that appear in his operations. This is a very subtle matter, and not every mind tolerates it. The Rambam already explained to us the matter of his uniqueness as in one unique and unified. These are his words in his commentary on the Book of Creation. There is a difference between one unique and unified. When he unites to act with one force, he is called unified. When he divides to act his act, each part of him is called unique. When he is in a single evenness, he is called one. Interpretation: uniting to act with one force means when he works to bestow, as is fitting of his oneness, and his operations are unchanging. When he divides to act his act, meaning when his operations differ, and he seems to be doing good and bad, he is called unique. Since all his different operations have a single outcome, benefiting. We find that he is unique in every single act and does not change by his various operations. When he is in a single evenness, he is called one, meaning one points to his essence, where all the opposites are in a single evenness. It is as Rambam wrote, in him knower, known, and knowledge are one. For his thoughts are far higher than our thoughts, and his ways from our ways. These are seemingly somewhat philosophical concepts because it's through the Rambam, but what he eventually wants to tell us is that everything comes from one root, and despite they appearing to us as different and unique and distant from one another, they're nevertheless, all these actions come from one root. Even though they can appear to us as contradictory, occurring in all kinds of ways, and opposite, it doesn't matter. They are all coming eventually to one result. Questions? Yes?
Me.
Kharkov. Kharkov.
Есть четкое понимание места, и в нем мы строим пространство. А в духовном, как бы получается, в одном и том же месте постоянно реальность меняется. Как вот скажите, пожалуйста, вот мы должны видеть эту реальность?
In our world, it's very clear what place is, and how to understand how is that divided in spiritual worlds. Place in the spiritual world is desire. That's the answer. I don't know what else he wants to hear. Ask it again, please.
И как бы нет никакой реальности, только есть место. Потом появляется реальность.
Лама там и натыкачли.
Why are you disconnecting in my side here? The speaker, can you connect it to him? Okay, well, he says there's a place and there's reality that are differentiated from one another. Where in spirituality they exist separately. For us, it's connected, something like that. I don't understand the question. Again? There's place and one that fills that place. The place of reality, and there's the reality that's in that place, right? There's two things. There's a desire and the quality that fills the desire. Yes? I don't understand the question so much. We're not yet talking on the same wave. Also here. Let's continue. It's not clear. Two discernments in bestowal before it received, it is received, and after it is received. Item 2. We should learn from those who ate the manna. Manna is called bread from the sky because it did not materialize when clothing in this world. Our sages said that each one tasted in it everything he wanted. This means that it had to contain opposite forms, meaning one person tasted in it as sweet, and another tasted it as acrid and bitter. Thus, the manna itself had to have been included of both opposites together. For can one give what is not in him? Thus, how can there be two opposites in one subject? It's therefore necessary that it is simple and devoid of both flavors, but is only included in them in a way that the corporeal receiver might discern the tastes he wants. In the same way, you can understand anything spiritual, which is unique and simple in itself, but consists of all the forms in the world. And when falling in the hand of a corporeal limited receiver, the receiver discerns a separate form in it from all the other forms, which are united in that spiritual essence. We should therefore always distinguish two discernments in his bestowal. The first is the form of the essence of that higher abundance before it is received when it is still an inclusive, simple light. The second is after the abundance has been received and thus acquired one separate form according to the properties of the receiver. You can attribute this to something similar to electricity. You can do thousands of actions with it, heat, cool, anything. But it itself is one. That's how it is in spirituality. One force that the receiver, according to his quality, what he's in, the state he's in, the internal state, reveals in that root different phenomena. That's why we cannot say about something that existing on its own, but all together, it's all connected and associated with the attaining person. And only a person who's attaining, according to where he is, he attains it. And not any other way. Meaning, we can never say that it comes from above in such a way, but rather it comes from above, and the receiver from below receives it according to the equivalence with him, with that phenomena, with the root. Questions? Yes. Hello. You told us that we have one force, one unique force, the Creator. Why in our Torah books, the name? What's going on with the speaker here? No. It can't be. It can't be that I don't hear here. Yes. Why is it written in the Torah books, in the first mention of the creation of the world, about a name called Elohim? That Elohim is in the form of plural gods. And if it's one, it's like almost the plural. Why is it said in such a way? What do we need to understand from such a thing? What's with you today, guys? It's like you're starting to be philosophers, and where are you taking Elohim being plural? Elohim is five sefirot. It finishes with a yun mem in the end. It implies the plural. Oh, so you're talking about grammar here. So it's not so. It's not that way. The name Elohim is from the five parts that are in this form of Havaya. And not talking about many, about plural. Thank you. Guys, either you talk to the point or I don't even know what to do with it. I expected to start with different questions. Well, okay, let's continue. Somehow. How can we, item three, how can we perceive that the soul as a part of godliness? Three. Now we can come to understand what Kabbalists wrote about the essence of the soul. The soul is a part of God above and is not at all changed from the whole, except in that the soul is a part and not the whole. It is like a stone that is carved from a mountain. The essence of the stone and the essence of the mountain are the same, and there is no distinction between the mountain and the mountain and the stone, except that the stone is a part of the mountain and the mountain is the whole. Thus far, the essence of their words. These words seem utterly perplexing. It is most difficult to understand how parts and differences can be discerned in godliness to the point of resembling it to a stone that is carved from a mountain. The stone is carved from a mountain by an axe and a sledgehammer. But in godliness, how and what would separate them from one another? Well, that's a question for the time being. Is the question understood? Yes? Again, as far as his Elohim, I don't know how much it's according to the grammar. The yud mem in the end of a word implies plural, that Eloka is one and Elohim is many. I have never heard that the combination of forces you called Elohim, and one force what? Eloka. You probably learned too much in
school.
I don't know how you can give some kind of justification. Elohim is one name that you refer to this phenomena as the five kelim and the five lights in a certain level. Elohim. That's it. Five letters, five kelim, which is Havaya. Next. The spiritual is divided by disparity of form, as the corporeal is divided by an X. Before we come to clarify the matter, we shall explain the essence of the separation in spirituality. Know that the spiritual entities become separated from one another only by disparity of form. In other words, if one spiritual entity acquires two forms, it is no longer one, but two. Let me explain it in the souls of people, which are also spiritual. It is known that the form of the spiritual law is simple. Certainly, there are as many souls as there are bodies, where the souls shine. However, they are separated from one another by the disparity of form in each of them, as our sages said. As their faces are not the same, their opinions are not similar. The body can discern the form of the souls and tell if each specific soul is a good soul or a bad soul, and likewise with the various forms. You can see that just as a corporeal thing is divided and cut like with an axe, and movement in distance of place is from one part to another, so it is with a spiritual matter, which is divided, differentiated, and disconnected in the way of disparity of form between each part. According to the measure of change, the distance from one part to another will be calculated, and you should remember this well, meaning that every spiritual thing is differentiated from the other spiritual thing, even the one that's adjacent to it, according to disparity of form, meaning there's a difference of qualities and therefore they're differentiated. And in the spiritual space or plane, if you could say so, they either get closer according to their qualities or separate and distance due to the qualities. And that's how the division between them occurs. Meaning, according to the qualities, it's according to the form. Questions? Yes? It's really strange to think about the fact that there's a multiplicity of forms. Does that have to do with the shattering somehow? Also, prior to the shattering, you have several forms. The will to receive that begins to cascade from above downwards divides according to the aviyut and the masachs and the lights which fill each and every part according to the equivalence of form. So you have a division already even before the shattering. After the shattering, certainly, there are truly... The whole will to receive that was in some form directed, concentrated together, let's say, according to one direction, a certain connection, one cascading even, nevertheless they were as one. Through the shattering, they were separated. The whole matter of the shattering is the separation of the parts that already don't have a masach that connects them, but there are their qualities that are natural and differentiate between them. Yes. And that first moment from which, from one, let's say from the four prinot, the reason for that is the purpose of creation? Or the thought of creation? certainly for then, out of the separation, they will be able to once again come to connection. Yes. If there was no thought of creation, then one would remain one. If it weren't for the thought of creation, then why would the upper force need to appear? According to the will to receive and to work with it, everything starts with the thought of creation, to create the creatures in order to benefit them. Because it's the nature of the good to do good. That's where everything started. That's what the Ari writes, that prior to that there was one light that was equal, and that too wasn't, because the light was as a light that appears in something that is one, that's already an appearance of a light within the desire. And the desire is the creature already. If it weren't for the thought of creation to benefit the creatures, then there would be no light to bestow to the creatures and no desire to receive it. That's the light is what fills it, corrects it. I feel that in the evening I don't have words. I can't explain myself. I'm under pressure. That's a wonder. It's already throughout all these lessons. In the morning I have clarity and everything, and in the evening, no. It's difficult for me to concentrate. It's difficult for me. I don't know what to do. I can see that I would like to give much more than I am capable of expressing. Okay, let's continue a little bit more and see. How can there be disparity of form in the creation with respect to Ein Sof? Item 5. We are still not content in this world, in souls of people, in relation to the soul, of which it was said to be a part of God above. It's still unclear how it is separated from godliness, to the point that we can call it a godly part. We should not say that by disparity of form, since we have already said that godliness is simple light that contains the whole abundance of forms and opposite forms in the world in his simple uniqueness, as in one unique and unified. Hence, how can we depict disparity of form in the soul, making it different from godliness, rendering it distinct to acquire a part of him there? Indeed, this question applies primarily to the light of Ein Sof prior to the Tzimtzum. For in the reality before us, all the worlds, upper and lower, are discerned by two discernments. The first discernment is the form of this entire reality as it is prior to the Tzimtzum. At that time, everything was without a boundary and without end. This discernment is called the light of Ein Sof. The second discernment is the form of the entire reality from the Tzimtzum downwards. Then everything became limited and measured. This discernment is called the four worlds, Atzilut, Briah, Yetzirah, Asiyah. It's known that there is no thought or perception whatsoever in his essence, and no name and appellation is in him. For no matter what we attain, whatever we do not attain, how can we define by a name? A name implies attainment, indicating that we have attained it as that name. Thus it is certain that there is no name or appellation whatsoever in his name, in his essence. Instead, all the names and appellations are but in his light, which expands from him. The expansion of his light prior to the Tzimtzum For the expansion of his light prior to the Tzimtzum, which filled the whole of reality unboundedly and without end, is called Ein Sof. Thus, we should understand how the light of Ein Sof is defined in and of itself and has departed from his essence, so we may define it by a name, as we have said about the soul.
Ken.
Yes. Questions. All the souls are a part, a godly part from above. Yes. And at the same time, they have a disparity of form. And what are they apart, and what are they changed in form? Their godly part from above is that he fills them, and the disparity of form is in the desire to receive in them. But in each and every one of them, the godly part is different, according to the desire that is different. What does that mean? A part of what it fills them. What does he fill them with? The upper light fills each and every soul according to equivalence of form with the soul. And this disparity of form is a part of the will to receive that is clothed, that was clothed upon this light. The disparity of form is that in each and every one there is a different desire, even though it's in order to bestow, and the light that fills it is also different relative to the desire. As according to the desire, the changes in each and every part. Being the soul is always made up of the desire and the light that fills it. Well, of course, yes, that's the small Havaya from the general Havaya. That's called the soul. So there's a different desire. Desire, Masach, and light that fills it. That fills the soul. But each and every one is different. Sinei Shammai is a spiritual Pertzuf. Yes. That's in connection with the Creator and the quality of bestowal that he has. Right? And that's the big desire that was divided. And many parts... Yes, there was one big desire that was divided into many souls. That big desire that was in existence is called the Neshama of Adam HaRishon, and it shattered and became many pieces of personal, private souls. But he was one, and there was one light, and everyone was in one adhesion. Why from that desire, with that light, many appeared? That's called the shattering, that they wanted to receive too much in order to bestow, and they couldn't, and then the shattering occurred. Now we're not learning that. Do you understand? It's like there were questions here until we got to Elohim. Whether it's multiple, you know, if it's plural or individuals. Okay. Well, let's conclude with this. I need to do something else to prepare myself for the evening lesson. Otherwise, I see that I'm tired and not concentrated. Nevertheless, Shabbat Shalom.